30 p.m. and admission is free. For more information, call 212-491-2229. That's 212-491-2229. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, a nonprofit organization by WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York, where it's 7:02, time for a special marathon edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. On Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. On Billy Bo!
To everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next 2 hours tonight. And we have special programming all throughout the night of a technical vein. And we have some very special guests with us, some regular guests with us as well. Hi, Mike. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hang on, I'm still turning on the microphones. There are so many people here tonight that you gotta keep track of. There you are, Jim. How you doing?
Oh, as bad as ever.
That's good. And Mike over there, and Jeff. Welcome. I've got your mic now. And a very special guest in from California, Mr. Kevin Mitnick. How are you doing?
Hey, good evening, Eric. Or Manuel, I'm sorry.
Whatever you want to call me is fine. people call me all kinds of things. As long as it fits within FCC regulations, I don't care. So welcome. Welcome to New York. You're here on a whirlwind tour.
Well, I haven't started the tour yet. I'm actually out here for media training, but I ended up doing a lot of appearances on some television shows and radio shows while out here in New York. Uh-huh. So it's been interesting. Unfortunately, I haven't had time to take a look at the city, especially after 9/11. But so I'm out here kind of on getting prepared for the book tour that I start next week.
Okay, so the book tour actually doesn't start till next week,
October 22nd.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So right now you're training the media and how to deal with it.
No, they're actually training me.
The media is training you.
Well,
they're training you how to deal with the media.
What Wiley has done, my publisher, John Wiley and Sons, is before a lot of these like magazine television shows will allow you to appear, you have to go through some sort of training to learn how to talk in sound bites. So I've traveled out from California on Monday, and I've been all day going through media training today, so I'm kind of burned out.
How to talk in sound bites.
How to talk in sound bites, you know, to address the questions very concisely and with clarity. So if you're doing a three to five minute television appearance that's live, you're able to communicate the information that I want to communicate and kind of, they train you how to take control of the interview.
And I think you did a 3 or 5 minute TV show that was live yesterday on Fox,
I did,
right?
Good Morning New York. Uh-huh. That's on Fox?
They're all called that, but yeah, I think
yeah,
the
Good Morning New York.
Fox, yeah.
I never watched television, so bear with me.
It's a good thing.
And then I was on the Bloomberg radio show last night.
Mm-hmm. That's the mayor's station. We're very proud of it. The mayor owns all the media in this town.
Well,
that way, it's safe. That way,
that way, the mayor controls.
We're not
the
owned
content.
By Bloomberg, but you know, I think that'll be solved soon.
You should have seen their. They had a very high tech radio station. It was pretty impressive.
Who does?
Bloomberg.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, very impressive. Everything was, down to the clocks. Everything that was computerized, modern. I mean,
what do you call that? This is a digital clock right there. See?
Yeah.
Digital.
Well, when I was hosting a radio show in Los Angeles, that the equipment there seemed kind of archaic, but we didn't have to. Operate the board like you're doing. It was pretty much you're the talent behind the microphone.
Well,
but you seem to be having to do a lot of things. So.
Yeah, but see that's what radio is doing a lot of things. You know, if I want the music
the
to dominate,
time.
Music gets louder. You know, or fade me down. You know, it's you can do whatever you want, and that's
we had what they called board ops and screeners, and. Producers and stuff like that. This is a so it's an interesting setup. It's very educational.
Mm-hmm.
It's really too bad I couldn't have been here before. I've called in on the telephone on numerous occasions, but it's interesting to be live in studio. So I'm really honored to be here. It's great.
Well, it's interesting. Our first show is in October of 1988. I don't think there's been a day since then that you have actually been a free citizen that can move around as you please and, not have to worry about something.
No, in fact, if you go to the Free Kevin website, the countdown clock is still ticking for the time I'm off my government supervised release, which ends on January 21st. And once that expires, I only have one thing I'm prohibited from doing, and that's from writing the true Kevin Mitnick story and profiting therefrom. And that's for an additional period of 7 years, but that's when I finally can get on the internet for the first time. I'm allowed to have a computer now.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Sony Vaio laptop, but I'm not allowed to use the internet yet.
January 20th, though, you will be allowed to use the internet.
Yes, because, you know.
And no doubt, January 21st.
I'm the Osama bin Mitnick of the internet, so of course they.
That's a soundbite. Wasn't that a soundbite?
That was a definite soundbite.
Wow.
The Osama bin Mitnick of the internet.
I saw
and
it.
And you can imagine the fear that it would generate if I were to get on Yahoo or Google.
Mm-hmm. Well, January 21st, 2003.
It's not that far off.
That's the day the internet's going to break because you're going to be on it for a full day.
That's the day that the FBI and the Secret Service go on full alert, probably. Mm-hmm. Just kidding.
Well, this time we're going to be watching very carefully because the last time your supervised release was about to end, how much of a time frame was there before the
30
FBI?
30 days.
30 days. So 30 days before you were going to be actually free. They started the whole thing that resulted in your 5-year imprisonment.
Exactly. What happened is the government sent this informant that was busted. He was a guy named Justin Peterson was busted on the Kevin Polson case. He became an FBI informant to try to entrap other people that were involved in computer hacking activities, turn them over to the government. So the government actually sent him to befriend me. Mm-hmm. And establish a relationship in hopes that they'd be able to collect information on what I was doing. But Peterson had another agenda. He figured the more feathers he had in his cap by busting people, mm-hmm. that he would be able to continue his life of crime and pretty much be immune from prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
So he pretty much dangled a carrot to go back into computer hacking. At that time I had stopped, and I ended up getting hooked again. And the government, it's a long story, but what happened is they ended up issuing a warrant for my arrest. I ran because I was afraid they were going to put me back in solitary confinement like they did in the first case. I don't know if you recall, but when I was initially busted in 1988, a federal prosecutor told a federal magistrate that I could start a nuclear war by whistling into the telephone. And the judge believed it, and I ended up being... placed in solitary confinement for about 8 months.
We have a dial tone. Can you still whistle?
I, I've been out of practice.
Oh,
and,
okay. Well,
so
we're gonna work
I don't know if I can do it. I used to be able to whistle 2600 hertz, but I don't think I can do that anymore.
Nick, meet the dial tone. And, we're off. That's what they're afraid of. Can whistle into the phone and
start a nuclear war. So anyway, I ended up spending 8 months in solitary confinement. That was a very unpleasant experience.
Well, the 8 months of solitary confinement was before.
Yeah, before this last case. Okay. So obviously when I found out the government was pursuing me, I was very concerned that they were going to do the same thing again. So I split. I was a fugitive for a number of years, ended up getting busted, and then I became the poster boy for computer hacking and ended up being held in pretrial detention for 4.5 years, being held without a bail hearing. Eventually, I pled out the case. I settled. The government offered me a deal. You plead out now, you'll do 6 more months in custody. If you don't, we'll take you to trial. If we lose, we'll take you to another federal jurisdiction and try you again. So I felt the best thing to do was cut my losses, and so I pled out the case, ended up serving about 5 years in prison, and was released on January 21st of 2000. And since then, I've done a number of things to change my life around, and I'd characterize myself as the retired hacker nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some of the things that you've been talking about indicate that it's very much in your head. It's not a part of your life you've turned your back on in any sense. You still remember how the insecurities of various systems work. What's
out
there?
Oh, absolutely.
The potential of things today. I mean, I read your book, and there are so many things in there that are current. It doesn't sound like somebody who was put away for 5 years. It sounds like somebody who is able to understand everything that's going on today, from 802.11 networks to current web pages, things like that.
Well, you know, the bottom line is companies are totally clueless. They remain vulnerable. They spend thousands of dollars on buying firewalls, biometric authentication devices, the secure ID, which is time-based tokens, encryption, intrusion detection systems. And if I can just call one employee in a company that has purchased that high-tech solutions and deceive them into doing something, running a computer program, installing software, revealing their password, all that money that they spent, those thousands and thousands of dollars, are just wasted. And these techniques that I've actually exposed in this book, and I've been criticized by my fellow comrades for kind of revealing a lot of the techniques and tricks that were used, but all these techniques still work today. I mean, every one of them. I'm sure you've recognized them. It's kind of funny because the story that most people like is how to beat your traffic ticket using social engineering. So it works in California. I don't know if it works here out here.
Yeah, I read that. I wasn't sure if it would work here, but certainly the mindset is something that you could apply to almost any situation.
One way to avoid traffic tickets is to not speed.
Thank you, Mr. People. Voice of Morality.
There you go.
I'm the anti-car voice. You can be immoral in other parts of your life.
All right. We'll consider that, too. Certainly you can take any kind of, mind manipulation, mind games that you play on people and apply that to almost any kind of situation. And, you can make successful social engineering out of that.
Yeah, I think successful salesmen, politicians, private investigators, all of them use social engineering to a degree. It's really just being an expert in persuasion, at persuading people and influencing people to comply with some sort of request. And social engineering always has the component of deception.
Right.
Because what you're doing is you're deceiving the individual into believing that some fact exists or that you are someone that you say you are, but you're really not. You're basically misrepresenting,
and that's not something
to get something done.
That's not something that just applies to hackers. That could apply, as you say, to salesmen, to police, to anyone who's trying to get something from you that you wouldn't ordinarily give.
Yeah, the biggest thing nowadays is identity theft. It's the fastest growing crime of the decade, and all the identity thief has to do is get certain pieces of information about you, your social security number, your address, your zip code, your mother's maiden name, and they now become you and establish credit cards and your credit card accounts. They can basically drain your bank accounts. In fact, I was just a victim of identity theft. Someone opened up a cellular phone account out of Denver in my name. And I think where they obtained this information is on the internet, people could look up my social security number and date of birth,
mm-hmm.
Because on the wanted poster
right.
that the U.S. Marshals had is now available on the internet, so anybody can pull that down, and they have this particular information, so they now can masquerade as me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what someone did, and stole my identity and opened up a cellular phone account.
Did you get the bill?
Yeah, it was actually mailed to my mom in Las Vegas.
Wow.
She sends me this bill. You know, why'd you run up this $300 bill in cell phone calls? And I go, well, first of all, I never used your address. You know, I'm talking to my mom now. Mm-hmm. And send me the bill. So I get the bill, and it was somebody opened up the account at a Denver, Colorado.
Now, it's that easy. Just the social security number and name. And you
yeah,
can,
to
you
apply
can
for credit. Yeah, you just need... See, what happens is the three credit bureaus, you have Experian, you have TransUnion, and you have Equifax,
mm-hmm.
and they store, you know, credit files on each and every one of this, as you know.
Right.
And to basically masquerade as somebody else, you pretty much need just very limited information, a social security number and an address and a name. That's pretty much it. And what happens is when someone who's going to grant an extension of credit inquires, they pull up your entire record. And they believe that you are who you say are just based on some information that you know. It's really simple. It's amazing. And another thing that I found out was when I was doing my radio show in Los Angeles, we found out that if I, with my credit card under Kevin Mitnick, if I wanted to pull your credit report from Experian,
mm-hmm.
I could do that, right? They allow you to use a credit card in a different name. And all you really have to know is like your date of birth, your social security number, your current address. And then they gave you three test questions to verify that you are who you say you are. And what they'll do is they'll pull information from your credit profile, like, and they'll ask you, like, did you ever live on such and such street? Or, and they'll give you a multiple choice. Have you ever worked at this company? Multiple choice. Is your year of birth? And they'll give you a multiple choice question. If you answer none of the above to all questions, it will allow you to run the credit report. And the reason is because so many people use other people's social security numbers that they can't tell whether or not you're really that person. So just by default, that gets around their security mechanism, so it allows anybody with a fraudulent credit card
mm-hmm.
to run anybody's credit profile just by having their social and their name. It's pretty scary.
That is pretty scary. That's something. Anyway.
What?
There's people a mile away trying to talk, so you have to be up at a microphone if you want to say something. We're going to be taking phone calls in a little bit. And also, of course, this is your opportunity to support the radio station. We'll be offering a special pledge package in just a couple of minutes as well. Did you have further information you wanted to pass along?
Oh, yeah. That was my co-host, Alex Casper,
uh-huh.
who's here from Los Angeles.
Hey, Alex.
And he just wanted to make sure that people aren't under the misconception that I was on the internet doing this. We had producers
right.
at KFI that actually did this
yeah,
stuff for us, and I just didn't want anyone to think, oh, is he using the internet?
Well, so, I mean, yeah. basically what you were able to do over the past couple of years is do a radio show at a major radio station in a major city and write a book, all without violating the terms of your supervised release, which is basically not being allowed to use the internet. You're allowed to use a laptop, I think?
Yeah, in fact, last year in January, after I received the book contract from Wiley, the probation department allowed me to purchase a computer to write the book on.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I was going to do it in longhand. And
yeah.
And it was under a condition that I was not able to tell anybody about it, especially the media. I had to keep it a secret that I was given permission. So about June, July, an AP reporter interviewed somebody that was high up in the probation department who revealed that I was, in fact, given this permission to use a computer to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And since the government already spilled the beans, I was given the okay to go ahead and talk about it, and I didn't have to keep it a secret any longer.
Okay.
So I was actually allowed to use a computer since January.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in a few more months, I'll finally be able to use the internet. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, as is everybody on the internet.
And I can finally
forward.
Have my email address at 2600.com, right?
Yeah, yeah, well, all the spam comes in. Unbelievable. We'll have to figure out a way to filter that, but... Okay, let's go into some listener mail, some news, then we'll announce the pledge packages, and hopefully we'll get a flurry of calls, and then we can actually also talk about the book. Okay, we have some mail from, and feel free anybody to jump in with comments and opinions on these pieces of mail. This is from a listener in Bulgaria. That's right, we have listeners in Bulgaria, as well as many other places in the world. This person has some news that's bothersome, he thinks. He wants to remain anonymous, which I think we can arrange. Basically, he agrees with us that telemarketing is evil. I hope we come up with a way to put an end to this. I live in Bulgaria, a former Warsaw Pact country. It's a poor country. Unemployment in the capital city of Sofia is at 7%, worse than in the rest of the country. Isn't our country, what, 12% or something? What's our unemployment rate? It's high.
I don't know.
It's up there. Yeah. Well, everyone I know is unemployed, so I think it's up there. Yesterday, a Help Wanted ad appeared in a newspaper calling for people with fluent English language skills who sound good over the phone, etc., people available to work during North American business hours. Yeah. Promises of great commissions, etc. Basically, what's happening here is that somebody's trying to make a buck off the fact that minimum wage in Bulgaria, and this is something I'd really like to know if this is true, it's about $12 a week, which is around 30 cents an hour.
Well, that's what I was making at Lompoc Federal Prison, 12 cents an hour.
Yeah, that's true. But these are people out in the street in Bulgaria. Yeah, I don't know. Are they making that little? Can you imagine?
That's incredible.
Prison wages in Bulgaria are. I lived in the United States until not too long ago and know that minimum wage is in excess of $5 an hour. I can't believe someone thinks that's a lot, you know, that in excess of five. That sounds like.
How can you survive on $5 an hour?
You can't survive on $5 an hour. Even if you work 24 hours a day, I don't think you can survive like that. With that perspective, you can figure out how easy it is for someone to deliver the so-called substantial salary to anyone who may fall for that. I think telephone calls to the U.S. are under 50 cents a minute. So basically, what it means is that people are becoming telemarketers from countries like Bulgaria, and I guess not liable to any kinds of telemarketing regulations, rules, restrictions, that kind of thing. And they're basically calling us long distance.
It's been happening in India, I know, for a while.
India calls here?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't think the phone lines were that reliable that they could actually...
If you're going to set up one of these things, you get reliable phone lines.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's something. I knew they you know, had slave labor making clothes and things like that. I didn't know that they had slave labor, you know, selling you Sprint and MCI and that kind of thing, whatever it is they're selling. If someone gets a call like that, in fact, a friend of mine recently has a beeper company, and he called his bill was late. He called the billing people, and he talked to two different people in a row, and he realized that neither one of them could speak English very well. So he finally asked them where they were. It turned out they were in Mexico. So then he called the sales department and said, are you aware that your fellow workers are working in Mexico? And it seems that the collections department had just recently been transferred, had moved, and they weren't aware that these jobs were being put in a different country at the substantially lower wages. So he planted the seed in the sales department and called back a couple of days later, and everybody knew about it, and there was a big to-do in the office. So if you find out a company is doing this, by all means, let everybody know, and maybe some justice for everybody will come about as a result of it.
If you get a sort of quality of life ticket, you know, spitting on the sidewalk or something like that in New York City.
That's easy to do. Yeah, you can do that very easily.
Yeah. It will be scanned in and sent to Ghana to be processed.
I heard that. Ghana.
Yeah. Ghana.
That's unbelievable. And God knows how much they pay people there.
Not very much.
A lot less than Bulgaria, I'll bet.
Yeah.
God. Have they ever done a study about the typical minimum wage in all these foreign different all these foreign countries? Or they probably don't have minimum wage
I don't think
laws.
They do. No, they don't have labor laws and various things. We take advantage of that.
I guess that's why it's great to be in America, huh?
Oh, yeah. Take advantage of everybody.
Where we have labor laws that aren't enforced.
This person's a Portuguese listener, and I can't help being astonished with lots that you talk about in the show. Portugal is a relatively democratic country. There's not much of censorship or tight surveillance over individuals unless they have incriminating backgrounds. The reason for my astonishment is the way you talk about your government controlling everything and everyone's life, surveillance cameras everywhere, laws that entitle the common citizen the right to judge others as being terrorist or not being terrorist, monitored networks, and that story about a guy who was sent to jail for downloading a movie. I think this is one of the stories on our website. My knowledge about the USA is mostly based on your president's important statements, which are usually shown on televisions all over the world. And I wonder how you people stand up for a government which, as far as they say, stands for freedom. I spoke to a few American people, and they say I know nothing about your country, which is probably true, and that my country is nothing more than a horde of underdeveloped barbarians. Well, I don't think that's true. Probably it's the same underdevelopment that allows me to say that though my freedom is limited, for instance, I can't start shooting people whenever I feel like it. I think of my people as not only free people, but more importantly, free individuals. Through the news, I know your country is full of mean people and all kinds of perverts and stuff. I think that's probably because of the way the media portrays certain things, too.
Was it download a movie, go to jail?
Well, that's what one person did.
We've got our fair share of mean people. I'll give them that.
We have mean people, but, you know, basically, the media creates hysteria that, you know, we have to have restrictions because of all the mean people, because of all the perverts. We have to have controls and things like that.
I was thinking of the mean people in control, but go on.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's how it was portrayed here, but that's certainly true as someone who is... sees them every day.
And that all comes down to power and money, right?
It usually does. Yeah. So this person basically is just making a bunch of comments from his experience in Portugal over there. And I think, you know, there's a lot that's true about these statements, that we are losing lots of freedoms and brushing it off.
But it's in the name of protecting the children and protecting us against terrorism.
Well, right now, as of today, they're flying spy planes over the United States looking for the sniper. Now, what I want to know is, how is a military spy plane going to find somebody who already shot people days ago? I mean, is it going to be some big target on his truck or something? How are they going to know? Even if someone does it right now, I still don't know how a spy plane is going to be able to figure out. Won't like a news chopper do the same exact thing?
Maybe he has some sort of predictable patterns and they're presuming that he might be in a certain location. Who knows? I don't know.
The thing is, when they don't catch this guy, and when 10 years have gone by and the spy planes are still above our country, people are going to start forgetting that there was a time when the military didn't patrol our skies and that we had a certain separation there. But in the interest of safety, in the interest of all the unsolved crimes that are mysteriously popping up, like anthrax and snipers, we need more control. We need more restrictions.
So, and we lose our civil liberties as a result.
Yeah.
Like the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
You know, and what about this new law that passed the Senate? I don't know if it passed the House and was actually approved, where they're going to try to approve life sentences for hackers.
People, I remember that.
And this was amazing, is you can go ahead and take a motor vehicle out on the road and intentionally injure somebody,
mm-hmm.
and you get, like, in California, you get maybe 1, 2, 3 years in prison, right? Under the new federal law, if you use a computer and you negligently injure anybody, then it's life without the possibility of parole. I mean, isn't that quite a little... It's somewhat of a disparity.
It certainly is. In fact, Jello Biafra gave a talk last night in Brooklyn. It's too bad he's not still here, because I'd love for you guys to meet. He's in Illinois now. But he gave a 4 or 5 hour lecture in front of an enthusiastic crowd. He mentioned the hacker thing. He mentioned, and this is something I guess he took away from the Hope conferences, that you can get a life sentence for hacking.
Yeah.
it's bizarre.
So if you use a computer as a tool to injure or to kill somebody, it's an automatic life sentence without the possibility of parole. But if you use another tool, like a car, well, that's okay. Then you might get a couple years. I mean, where's the logic?
Yeah, yeah. And I think we're not even talking about using it to intentionally kill somebody. I think unintentional was in there somewhere.
If you're messing around. Recklessly or negligently cause serious injury or death, mm-hmm. you fall under the provisions of the statute to get a life term.
Yeah, so if you basically are doing some war dialing and calling up different exchanges to find out where computers are, and you find a computer and it's, you know, Sloan Kettering Hospital, hit enter to stop all medication to all patients, or maybe it doesn't even say that and you just hit enter anyway, you're liable because you did something bad with the computer, even though they had no security whatsoever. And by the way, I have no knowledge that Sloan Kettering has no security, and I think they do have security.
Yeah, I think it's just a prime example of the punishment not fitting the crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's read some more mail, and then we'll talk about the book a bit. This person operates a small 10-listener amateur shoutcast station, wants to know if rebroadcasting complete copies of Off the Hook is allowed. How many times do we have to say this? Yes, it's allowed. In fact, it's encouraged. Rebroadcast. Do whatever you want. Take our show and broadcast it off every radio station in the world. Well, we're quite happy, but let us know, because that way we can publicize it some more. This is from Josh in Bend, Oregon, which is a great name. This person wants us to know that you might be interested in knowing that the band System of a Down supports Kevin Mitnick. I learned of this when visiting their links page on systemofadown.com. Very cool. You ever listen to that band?
No. Oh, what type of band?
It's you know, one of those it's a band the kids like, you know.
Rap?
Rock? I wouldn't say rap.
Country?
No, I definitely wouldn't
elevator
say country.
Music?
I wish I had one of their CDs with me. Maybe one of the members of the band is listening. They can call in. But,
yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd like to hear their
music. They're not the only one. I mean, you've appeared in all kinds. I think you were on, let's see, what, who else? Chumbawamba. I think you were on their site at one point.
What about, who wrote the Digital Hijack? Who was that, eToy?
eToy did something. There was also a group of people in Germany that did something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're out there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Gentlemen, love your show. Listen to it all the time. On the last show, you mentioned T-Mobile's Who Called Me service on voicemail. I contacted their technical department and was told that as part of the system upgrade, this service is no longer available. This is where you get caller ID on voicemail, and that's something we tried to demonstrate last week. In fact, yeah, we've confirmed that it's no longer available. I asked if the upgrading would add the lost feature sometime in the future and was told that it would not. Isn't progress wonderful? So basically, if you had VoiceStream or you had OmniPoint and now you have T-Mobile, you can no longer get caller ID on voicemail. You'll have to call the person back, and then they tell you the number that you're calling. That's the only way to get it. It's ridiculous. Now, Kevin, you told me about this. You have a GSM phone now.
Yeah, it's really cool. I signed up for the new service through AT&T Wireless, where you get unlimited calling any time of day for $99.95, I think it is. No roaming and free long distance, which is great because I'm a real heavy cellular phone user. I pretty much don't even use my home phone. And the downside of this service is it's very spotty service. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it works here in New York. I actually purchased a prepaid AT&T free-to-go wireless on their TDMA network in the event that it wasn't working in New York. But they launched the service in New York on October 15th. I flew in on the evening of the 14th.
Yeah.
So I was extremely lucky.
Yeah, you brought it with you.
Yeah, but the service works reasonably well. And for $100 a month, unlimited calls, no roaming, free long distance.
Mm-hmm.
That's
domestic.
I couldn't beat it.
Domestic calls, though.
Domestic. In the continental United States.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so I'm going to do something now that I've never done before, at least not on the air. I'm going to scan for networks on my GSM phone. Right now, you know, in this country, you could only get one network. Let's see what is available now if there's more than one network on a GSM phone. And actually, if anybody else has a GSM phone, let's all try this. You have a GSM phone there, Alex? Okay, great.
My GSM phone is right here.
Well, go ahead. Look for it. Now, Alex, do get your microphone on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed on the Singular bills last month, Singular screwed up, and I pointed this out to Kevin. Anyone calling a Singular number from a private number, their private phone number was printed on the bill. A block number.
Unbelievable.
All incoming calls were printed.
Okay, I have results here. I voice stream, and it shows up as 310-160. 310 is a country code for the United States on GSM, and 160 is their identity number. And yes, I'm getting a second network now. It says USA 380, 310-380.
That's AT&T.
Is that AT&T? Yeah. For some reason, it says USA instead of AT&T. So anyone else out there with a GSM phone, try scanning now and see if you can do that. Now, I'm trying to register with them right now to see if I can actually make a phone call off AT&T on my GSM phone, which is currently hooked up to T-Mobile. It says registering, and we'll see if that actually works. Now, are you scanning now?
Unfortunately, on the new Nokia 8390s, they don't let you scan anymore.
They don't let you scan?
Yeah. There must be a way of doing
it. There's got to be a way to do that. Maybe somebody out there can help us.
I purchased the phone a couple days ago. I haven't even looked at the manual, to be honest with you.
By the way, another fun feature of this phone is it's got a built-in infrared modem.
Uh-huh.
And because it's unlimited connect time, you could use your little infrared laptop.
Yeah. Now, can you imagine computer attackers using this? They plant one of these 8390s on the service under a fraudulent name. You know, and connect it to some server at some company, and then they have free dial-in access 24 hours, 7 days a week. Well, I guess here, then it's on the life of the battery.
Yeah, that's probably
true.
So we can plug it into a wall, you know,
plug it
do it that way.
Yeah.
But, okay, so I got bounced back to VoiceStream. It wouldn't let me register with AT&T. I was told, I actually talked to a technical person over there that seemed to know what they were talking about, that as of October 27th, they will be allowing people from other phone companies to use their service. So technically, I will be able to use this phone on the AT&T network. Now, I don't know. It would be great if I could get the same calling plan on my existing number so that I could have two phone companies on the same number and only have to carry one phone instead of two.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be neat.
I mean, what is your deal? Do you what is your deal with your service? Is it, you don't get $100.
No, I don't get that. Basically, they just take whatever they want from me, and I complain. It doesn't do any good. Okay, let's continue here. Basically, we are in fundraising mode here at the radio station. That's why we're on for an extra hour tonight. We have with us Kevin Mitnick in the studio. Kevin has just written a book called The Art of Deception, and it's a fascinating book. There's all kinds of stories and instructions on how social engineering works. Maybe, Kevin, you give us one example of one of the stories in here so people can have an idea.
One of my favorite examples is how to beat your traffic ticket in California, and this is where the social engineer calls up the agency. First of all, on a traffic ticket in L.A., I don't know how it works here, is you have the issuing agency, the officer's name and serial number. So it's just a matter of calling the agency. The social engineer, of course, calls the agency, finds out the telephone number to subpoena control, because the subpoena control clerk handles subpoenaing officers to cases.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody can call up and just ask, what's the telephone number for the subpoena control clerk? And then once that number is obtained, then the social engineer can simply change hats and now become an attorney with a law firm or even with a district attorney's office, because they need to subpoena this officer on a case. And they need to know the officer's schedule, because they might have a conflicting date of all the other people they need to subpoena in the case. So they need to know when the officer will be unavailable, either on a vacation day or on a training day. Now, once the social engineer is able to obtain this information when the officer is unavailable, then it's the matter of going through a procedure of scheduling the court date for the appearance, for the trial, on that date, and especially on a training day, because officers in California cannot take, on a training day, they have to go for training. They can't go to a court case.
Shouldn't they be trained before they become officers?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know what a training day is, but that's... I don't know the particulars of it.
New techniques in beating people up.
Okay.
That may be the Rodney King thing. Who knows? Yeah. So anyway, they find out the officer's scheduled, and they simply go through the steps of scheduling the court date for the trial on a date that the officer's not available. When they go to court, the officer doesn't show, the case is automatically dismissed, because that's the law in California. So those are like kind of some, you know, interesting stories of the practicalities of how social engineers like beat the system. But even more interesting is it exposes the techniques that, you know, people are using today to get access to computer systems and to get access to information. And it's not even using technology. You don't even have to use a computer. You simply have to know how to social engineer. And it's kind of a performance art. It's not like people that actually read the material in the book or read the stories could actually just instantaneously pick it up. It's interesting, but the reason I didn't write the book to be a social engineering manual. What I wrote the book to do was really raise awareness into all the different techniques that are used, so people could become aware of these techniques and be able to recognize if someone tries to social engineer them.
Okay. Interesting. And the book, as I said, is called The Art of Deception. It just went onto the shelves last week, I believe.
Yeah, it was published on October 4th. I'm on a book signing tour. By the way, if anyone's interested in coming to one of my book signings, and I will be in New York, I think, I have a book signing on October 28th. They can go to, you know, Alex and I just started up a company called Defensive Thinking. They go to our website at www.defensivethinking.com. They can click on a link called Art of Deception, and it has my whole speaking tour. So they can see what dates and where I'm going to be. So if they want to come and listen to my talk and get a book signed, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, great. We also have a special deal here for people listening to the radio station that want to support the program. We have a donation of a bunch of books and a bunch of videos. We made the film, the documentary about your ordeal going on. For the last...
The persecution?
Yeah.
Because I won the scapegoat sweepstakes.
Yeah. And that, of course, is Freedom Downtime. We have both of these items that we're offering tonight. Now, for a pledge of $75, you will get a copy of Freedom Downtime that is autographed. An autographed copy by you, Kevin. So we have the pen here.
Oh, you have a pen handy.
Going to sign them right here.
At least have a Sharpie?
We're going to work it out. So for that pledge,
we have a Sharpie.
We have a Sharpie.
I think I could oblige.
Okay, we'll make sure that it you know, it stays on there. It doesn't rub off. 212-209-2950 is the number to call to pledge for that particular package. And now we also have the video and the book, both of which will be signed by Kevin for a pledge of $125. So
plus your password.
Yeah, plus we have all kinds of secret information on there. So, and of course, anybody who pledges will get a signed copy of the new issue of 2600, which just came out. But those are the two premium levels that we have here. So what we want to do, and we have no phone calls on the line right now, we want to get that up a little higher than that, 212-209-2950. Basically, a signed copy of this. First of all, the book itself is just really amazing. I read it in a couple of days. It was just fascinating reading and very educational.
It's like if you like Mission Impossible and you like Alias and you like James Bond, that type of genre of stories, these are like a series of mini thrillers that use... Now, unfortunately, since I'm not allowed to write about my exploits because of that agreement I had to sign with the government,
right.
I could not write about my exploits.
Mm-hmm.
So what I had to do was take... I had to develop fictionalized stories, but I use the same techniques and tactics and strategies that I've used in the past and that are people that are using today to hack into systems.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really is what's contained in the book, is a series of these case studies, these realistic scenarios that really work and really work today. And even as even though technology changes and Microsoft releases new code with new buggy soft, you know, releases new operating systems
right.
with buggy software, and that goes with every operating system, but these techniques of social engineering, of manipulating people by knowing how to manipulate certain psychological triggers, still work today.
And they always will work. As long as they're human beings, they will always work. These are some of the techniques I remember from the 80s.
Yeah, I remember, when I was first introduced into social engineering was back when I was a phone freak, right. in the phone freaking days.
And it's an essential part of playing with phones is to be able to take on personalities.
Exactly. You want to learn the terminology, the lingo.
We have four phone calls on the line, 212-209-2950. We want to bring that up. We have capacity for many more. There's volunteers who have come in to take phone calls, take pledges here at the radio station. And I want people to keep this in mind, too. It's not just about getting the book. It's not just about getting the video. It's about supporting WBAI, because this station has brought you the Kevin Mitnick story since our very first episode back in 1988. We've been talking about Kevin, and here he is for the first time in our studio live. None of that would have been possible were it not for people in those years pledging support to this radio station to keep it going. We don't have commercials. We don't have... these entities out there that we can't risk pissing off, because if we do, they're going to stop paying us money and we won't be able to tell stories like this. Now, Kevin, you were on a commercial radio station. Was there ever any kind of
I was
pressure?
Waiting for when the break is. Like, where's the commercial segment? And we're not on segments.
We're not going
to
have
straight
that.
Through.
Occasionally, we have to give the pledges. And you're lucky enough to arrive on a day when we have to do that. But when you work on a commercial radio station, there's always that pressure that, if you get too, too freewheeling with your speech, you might really annoy one of the sponsors, and then we'll lose the sponsorship. And
well, I love the thing that Phil Hendry had done in the past. You know who Phil Hendry is?
Oh, that guy's a genius.
He's a genius. He once did
is
this.
He still on the air?
Oh, still on the air.
KFI640AM.com. Anyone
right,
who,
but
who
if you go to Premier Radio Networks, he's actually syndicated on Premier, and this guy's an extremely talented radio show host.
Mm-hmm.
He once did a story, and this guy really. Is he's the host and he's the guest. He uses different voices and he has conversations with himself.
Ultimate social engineer.
I mean, it's just you got to listen to
people
this guy.
People call in because his guest is saying something so outrageous, they call in to yell at the guest saying, "How can you say this?" And the guest is the same as the host and they don't realize it.
They don't realize it, and he's wearing all these different hats.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and
one
live.
Day
he does it live.
Yeah, he holds a phone, actual phone, and cuts microphones.
How does he do it?
Back and forth. He has like a multiple split personality.
But how does he do it technically? He has a button or something?
He has a phone, like a G handset next to him. And he actually cuts the mic and talks on the phone. He changes his voice at the same time. Occasionally, if you listen really carefully, you can hear the breaths that they're saying. But that's the only clue you'll get. And people really get quite
angry. They argue with each other, too.
Yes, very well.
Oh, and then he moderates the argument. Uh-huh. But he did a story once about if you go to Disneyland and you ride the Matterhorn and you have your head turned a certain way, it will decapitate you.
Oh, cool.
So Disneyland was not happy with this, and they yanked their sponsorship from KFI. So
instead of fixing it, they yanked the sponsorship.
Well, it's all made up.
Oh, it was made up.
Yeah,
okay.
He made it up as a joke in one of his shows.
And they had no sense of humor about it.
And they had no sense of humor about it, but mm-hmm. I thought it was hilarious.
Now, did Phil get yelled at because he lost Disney as a sponsor?
I don't know, but actually Disney ended up going back a couple years later, but I'm sure he got a talking to, but it was interesting. It was hilarious.
What's brilliant about that particular program, I won't spend too much more time on it, but he would actually pretend he was calling the program director and do a pretty good imitation of the program director's voice.
And that was my program director, David Hall.
A real guy, David Hall. I remember this. And you know, everybody would be calling in, like, you know, yelling at this David Hall guy, how can you do this? How can you make Phil, like, you know, grovel like that? And he'd get hate mail. And some people would swear they were going to call the FCC about it. I imagine, you know, it led to some uncomfortable situations for him. But you have to have a sense of humor, and it was brilliant radio. And that's what I think is amazing. So maybe KFI isn't the best example of a station where people, you know, feel that kind of pressure. But I do know that stations that, you know, on the FM dial and here in New York City, you can't say things like the things we say. And I don't just mean this program.
It's much more relaxed here because it's not a commercial radio station. You don't have to tease the next segment because the whole idea is teasing the listeners over the commercial breaks because mm-hmm. that's the whole idea of radio, to sell commercials.
I don't know if relaxed is the word I'd use to describe this place, but definitely more thinking. More thinking is going on. And
maybe more informative.
More controversy. Yep. And more openness. We open up the phones. We listen to what people say. And people can say all kinds of things here. And we have diversity of opinion. And that is my point. That is why people should be calling in right now, 212-209-2950, because you won't find a radio station like this anywhere else on the dial here, and certainly very many places in the country, you will not find stations that talk about this kind of thing. Where did you hear about the Kevin Mitnick story? Odds are you either heard about it through 2600 or on the internet or on this radio station. And before that, we had the Bernie S. story. And before that, we had the fiber optic story. Who knows what stories lie ahead? With this voice, with this mechanism, we have the ability to get the word out, to reach people that otherwise would never hear things. Yes, it's one thing to spread news over the internet, but to reach somebody in Queens with a radio that has no computer and no interest in getting one, how else are you going to do it if you don't have radio? That's why we need our sponsors, our real sponsors, who are the listeners, to call in. 212-209-2950. We're down to two phone calls on the line. We need a lot more than that if we're going to keep this place going. We're 50,000 watts on top of the Empire State Building. It defies logic that we should have such a place like this in this day and age. Radio stations are, you know, there are no frequencies left. They pay hundreds of millions of dollars for frequencies. We have this station because of a real donation made to us back in 1959, I believe, of someone who just wanted to give a radio station to a bunch of really cool people who were talking about free speech and things like that. And it's remained to this day solely because of listeners. So please join that group of people and keep us going. 212-209-2950. As we mentioned, we have the book Kevin Mitnick has written for a pledge of $125, along with a copy of the documentary we made about Kevin and what has happened to him over the years, Freedom Downtime, both of which will be signed by Kevin Mitnick. And if you just want the film, that's a pledge of $75. If you want to pledge less, or if you want to pledge any other amount, you'll get a copy of 2600 also signed. We're going to just give a whole bunch of those to people to send to anyone who pledges tonight. 212-209-2950. Please give us a phone call. Kevin, you've talked to a lot of different media people in the past, a while, I guess.
Well, the last couple of days, it's been very intense with media interviews.
Uh-huh. But even before that, you've been on, you know, CNN and Fox and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing media for the last 2 years. I mean, because something new is always happening with me. Mm-hmm. The last spat of media had to do when I was when I put the laptops that the FBI recently gave me back mm-hmm. that I used on my hacking heyday, put them on eBay. So the media started, you know, writing stories about these laptops that went mm-hmm. up on eBay, and it became a very interesting issue because I don't know if you recall, about a year and a half ago, I auctioned off my prison ID card, mm-hmm. and eBay yanked it from the auction because they said it violated their acceptable use policies. It was really a bunch of BS, and then I ended up putting this prison ID card on Amazon and on Yahoo. And Yahoo did the same thing. They yanked the card. Mm-hmm. It doesn't meet their community standards. So it ended up, it created this big media boo-ha-ha. And then the card ended up being auctioned off for a good sum. I think it was around $4,000.
Yes, there's a real demand for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
For signed things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what That's was right. interesting is these laptops, how they were returned to me is it had the original fingerprint dust. My girlfriend actually had, they actually took the hard drives out. We actually had to reassemble the machines. But they actually marked X's where they lifted my latent fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually initialed it. It was, like, very meticulous about how the FBI did their forensics on these machines, and we put them back together. They're in working order. And I figured it would be really cool to auction them off on eBay, really to cover my lawyer's bills, because I don't know if you knew that the FCC was challenging my amateur radio license.
Yes. In fact, some people want to know how that turned out. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Okay, great.
212-209-2950. We had four calls on the line. We're now down to two again. Please, let's keep those calls coming in. As Kevin mentioned, these things wind up being worth quite a bit. Something with Kevin Mitnick's signature on it, I'm sure. If you fall upon hard times in the future, you can probably stick that on eBay and make back at least what you paid. 212-209, not that I'm suggesting that. Hold on to this because it's something that I think will be valued. Plus, you know, apart from that, there's several reasons. Yeah, you get Kevin's signature on something, but you also get a really interesting book. And you get a really interesting videotape. And most importantly, and this is what I stress, you support this means of communication, which has no other means of support. 212-209-2950. We have 7 calls. So let's see how many we can get, how many more we can get. There's a lot of volunteers down there. We just lost two people in the studio who ran down to answer phones.
So we're not going to be able to take any calls.
We're going to take calls over here on the other line. But,
okay.
I'm imploring people to call that line first, get their pledge over with, and then we'll take some phone calls.
I really think
here.
They'll love the book. If you're interested in anything about social engineering, if people are interested in how I was able to compromise the most resilient computer systems, and pretty much I was successful at getting into any system I wanted or getting any information I wanted, and the techniques that are used are illustrated in this book. So I'm kind of exposing the secrets, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the show about exposing the magic illusions, the secrets.
Yeah.
This is kind of, in a similar sense, exposing the techniques that I use, but more importantly, for people that are out there that want to protect their own information, of how they can, prevent it from happening to them.
It's different, though, than the magic, because this affects everybody. There are people who like to do it, and then there's people who have it done to them. And everybody is interested. The people who do it are interested in the new techniques. The people who have it done to them are interested in how to protect themselves.
So, exactly.
Emmanuel, do you think you'd be handing, when you're handing this book to someone who makes a pledge,
mm-hmm.
a signed book, are you giving them a hacker manual?
Well, I don't think it's a hacker manual in simple terms like that. I think it's something hackers are very interested in because it shows how things work. It shows how the mind works. Shows how people can be manipulated. I think anyone would be interested in that, not just hackers. I mean, I was fascinated in it because I've been involved in social engineering in the past, right. and hopefully in the future. And I've been, I was taking
You'll
notes,
have
saying,
to
"Wow,
tell us about that." Yeah. I'm interested.
Tell
in
us
that.
About your social,
social
engineering.
Social engineering is not necessarily a crime. It's if I call a customer service representative on the phone, I can be whoever I want to be. I can get information from them in various ways. How do you think I find out about new products coming out, about how to get around certain problems with telephones
so
and things
Emmanuel,
like that?
What's your favorite ruse?
I like the foreign accent thing.
Let's hear one.
You talk, I don't want to make fun of particular foreign accents on the radio. I might get letters and things like that. But basically, if you use a foreign accent and keep repeating things over and over again, eventually the customer service person will get so impatient that they'll just tell you anything to get you out of there. And sometimes they'll tell you things they shouldn't tell you in the first place.
True.
They'll get so frustrated. You cause their frustration level to go off, mm-hmm. go so high that they'll just do anything to just get rid of the call.
Yeah.
A good way to make them A good way to make them frustrated is to continually mispronounce their name.
Uh-huh.
They get so angry.
Just keep changing it.
Just seems idiotic.
So. Uh-huh. We have five calls on the line, 212-209-2950. And I should also point out, maybe I should mention this from the beginning, we only have 20 of the books.
Yeah.
So
if
you're thinking of waiting, you're going to be regretting that.
Now, Emmanuel, will you sign them too? Or would that be
I guess I have to now.
Well, it makes them more valuable, doesn't it?
Well, unless people don't want me to sign them, okay?
Right.
So if pledges are conditional on me not signing them, make sure you mention that to the tally people. Otherwise, I guess I'll join Kevin in the book signing marathon, which is follow the show, or we'll do it during the show.
So my hand is going to be very tired.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to ask you a question. You were asking if this was a hacker manual.
Right.
Suppose you put a knife in someone's hand. Is that a murder weapon? It all depends on who gets it and how they use
yeah,
it, really.
Anything it's could be abused. Information
exactly,
could be abused.
Exactly.
Physical devices could be abused.
Well, that's a complaint that's come. A couple of media people have asked you if this is a hacker manual, because it tells you step by step what to do. And so if someone pledges and gets this book, they could use it for that. So it's just something, it's a very interesting book, but, you know, just it's an interesting book, and that's one thing that makes it interesting, is it could be used for good or for bad.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah, information, like what
yeah.
we publish here in 2600.
Yeah, but
it's
full it's disclosure.
Information.
It all right. comes down to full disclosure. Do you keep this information secret so the masses do not know, so they could be manipulated,
mm-hmm.
or do you disclose it to everybody so people learn from this and understand it and are able to recognize it to protect themselves?
I've never seen these techniques printed anywhere else.
When this hits, you know, corporate America, there's going to be such a flurry of reaction to it, because so many things are spelled out. You don't just give generalities, say, well, it's possible somebody could do this. You say exactly how. You say where the information is on the internet. You say what the particular names of the phone company computers are that they would need to have access to in order to do this. You say what the commands are for them to put into the computer. This is going, you know, there's one instance here where you tell how it's possible to rob a bank over the phone.
Don't try this at home.
Don't try it anywhere, really. But
it's still illegal.
To call in and actually have somebody transfer a huge amount of money to some account in Switzerland, and it's not something that's just theoretical. You show exactly how it would be done using the exact terminology. This is something that's going to get quite a reaction.
Yeah, it's kind of like a social engineering Bible. And
Look at those phone calls.
Oh, great. We're lighting up.
People want this. It's really something to cherish. 212-209-2950.
But also a great part, well, a great portion of the book. Well, not really the great portion. At the part four of the book, which is, I'd say, a third of the book, is it's an operating manual,
mm-hmm.
for so that people that are in businesses could implement some of the ideas, the policies and procedures, and the security awareness training programs that will help protect their businesses from being victimized by people that use these techniques. So it's interesting for people on both sides of the coin.
Absolutely.
For people that are interested in knowing how social engineering works, to people that need to protect themselves against things like identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy in Queens without a computer can use these techniques too.
That's true.
You don't even need a computer.
You don't need a computer.
No.
You don't need a phone sometimes.
You don't even need to be in Queens.
You sort of need a phone. That's true. You don't.
The most interesting one is when I was, many years ago, I was able to... I called up BT,
mm-hmm.
in the UK, and was able to social engineer the customer service rep at BT into giving me an X directory number, which here in the States is like an unlisted or non-published number.
Uh-huh.
So it was I was kind of impressed that these techniques even work in other countries where you don't even have the same accent or even speak the language.
That's right.
Yeah,
I should point out now, we're nearing the end of our first hour, in about 50 seconds, actually. The Personal Computer Show, normally heard at this time, will be joining us in around half an hour or so, and we'll be carrying on throughout the night. So if you're gnashing your teeth because you don't hear the Personal Computer Show right now, just comfort yourself in the fact that there's going to be more of the Personal Computer Show than normal tonight. So and Kevin will be on that program as well. But they won't have the book. We have the book, The Art of Deception. And from these phone calls, we might not have the book much longer. 212-209-2950. Again, a pledge of $125 will get you the book and a copy of Freedom Downtime, the documentary, the two-hour documentary on Kevin Mitnick and the Free Kevin Movement, both signed by at least Kevin, maybe me as well. And for a pledge of $75, you can just get the video. And for our Tally people down there, we have, I think, an unlimited number of the videos. So if we run out of books, we still have the videos.
Hey, by the way, Manuel, this does bring me up to a point, and I know I said this to you before in person,
mm-hmm.
but since we're in a public radio station with 50,000 watts on the top of the Empire State Building, I want to thank you for all the support and help you've given me throughout the many, many years, because this book wouldn't have been possible without the help of you and all the supporters that supported me when I was going through my ordeal. And I wanted to actually publicly tell you this and thank all my supporters out there, because it really, I'm imagining myself how I was 3 years ago, mm-hmm. sitting in a lonely prison, not knowing what my life was going to be. And here I've been able, you know, I've turned my life around. I've been able to author a very successful book. And I want to thank you personally and all the other people at 2600. I mean, I really believe in my heart I couldn't have done this without your guys' support.
Yeah, the Free Kevin campaign was amazing.
And I just want to tell you that.
I got to tell you something else. It's interesting. The whole Free Kevin movement came at a very interesting time for us. We were new to the world of activism as far as how it related to computer hacking and things like that. So many people came together. So many people from different parts of the world lent their talents and their time, their expertise. And we learned so much from that, that when it came time for us to really put that to use to defend ourselves when we were sued by the MPAA, it snapped together so much faster. You know, it was something that
Built the network.
The network was there, and it's something that's still there to this day. And I think in that way, you've really strengthened us. And you've inspired us at the same time because your strength. I mean, very few people could go through what you went through and emerge the way you've emerged and be able to write books. I know you have every right to be bitter, but your bitterness is not defining who you are.
Exactly. And you know, I put that behind me. It's like that's the old Kevin Mitnick, and now I'm moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, you know, as part of the reason I'm being productive and I'm getting on with my life is that I'm out. And that you got the word out. You got the word out through 2600 Magazine, through this radio station. Without this radio station, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't have known the real truth. They wouldn't have known the reality of Kevin Mitnick. They would have bought into the myth of Kevin Mitnick mm-hmm. that was created by John Markoff.
Right.
So this radio station has been critical to the Free Kevin movement, so I support it 100%.
Okay. And hopefully our listeners out there also will support it 100%. We have a number of calls on the line. If the phones don't get picked up, I see some of them are still ringing. Don't give up because it means that our tally people are overwhelmed. And that's actually a good thing. We don't like to torture people, but it's good to have them going nuts over there because it means a lot of phone calls are coming in. And we will get to you as soon as we can. So keep the phone calls ringing. Keep the phones ringing and call us and pledge what you can. 212-209-2950.